If Murray has supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blubbity Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes. Underneath breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grind America Show. Coming at you this week with Nora Spinner with netism.
I never thought spinning nets, spinning webs.
Maybe is net. I thought netism was more like the internet.
No, it's more like, you know, like the one, like we're all connected, right? It's almost like the ancient wisdom, like the net from not the Hindus, but the Vedas, like the net from the Vedas, like the web from the Vedas. That's the way I think.
I don't know.
you're just fucking singing what?
If people want to skip ahead to
do you know that you do that on Grind America a lot too? You just sing my what I say back to me. Like, is that on purpose or is that just a thing you do?
Yeah, I guess it's on purpose. It's on no dead air, you know. It's one of this little podcast thing I picked.
No dead air.
I don't know if I picked it up from Courier Dvorak. But I feel like it was one of them.
I don't think so. I think it's from the black ladies calling each other out back.
The black ladies? I'm not listening to any black ladies. Anyway, it's a good, it just better than saying, listen, I'm trying to not say like and ah and stuff like that and just like, just fill it in with anything else.
Sing,
there you go. That's better than them. It's better than them.
I'm going to start doing it back to
you. How about fuck you, Dunlop?
Fuck you, Dunlop.
With your fucking Hitler haircut.
I know. What's going on with my haircut? Hey, it does seem, it's a bit, she went a bit nuts on the oats, but this it usually grows in the spot, but yeah.
You can comb that over and look like a total Nazi. You should try it just tomorrow. Yeah,
I should. Yeah.
Try the lefty. Yeah. Is it a lefty? Did H do a lefty?
I don't know. I don't know. Wow. So we got a lot to talk about.
I've been, because I haven't been listening to No Agenda anymore, of course, because Dvorak passed away. He was secretly 80.
Yeah.
Actually, we got a few nice notes in the chats and stuff like that about people sending us good wishes. Made people think about not taking their podcasters for granted.
Yeah. Oh.
It hit some people hard. Dvorak's a big one, right?
So, yeah, it is a big one, yeah.
He's a banger, so.
Getting lots of love on X still and stuff. Yeah, we missed the JCD.
Yeah, I released an episode compilation on YouTube of our three videos with him.
Wow, really?
Yeah, because I don't think a lot of people got him to do video of his studio. There was actually people in the No Agenda Discord that I was in that were talking about how you never see him on video. And then they were in there actually sharing our interviews with him. And they're like, here's his studio.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if the other one was
video or not. Yeah. So did you listen to the new, the show that's replacing it for now with Darren O'Neill and Larry, maybe? Is it Larry and Darren?
I haven't listened to that. I'm just giving it a break. Sort of that's my sort of... Yeah. I will go to a meetup if there is, because I did notice the meetup thing was going around. If there is a local meetup, Memorial JCD meetup, because I know there's like, we got Dame Monica Lansing from Drayton Valley that listens to the show. We got Paul. There's such a huge George, our guy George that runs our servers.
Yeah.
He's a big No Agenda. We met George at a No Agenda meetup, and now he's our server.
All right. That was a great meetup.
Yeah, I think the only one that we ever went to. But if there is one of those, I'd probably go with one of those, but I'm just not really into listening to the show for a while. I need to take a break. And so I've been listening to, I've been hooked on Caleb Hammer.
Oh, that's awesome. Nonstop. That's awesome. Cause he's, isn't he, let's not even talk about it, but
it's all financial stuff.
And it's wasn't he kind of like lefty? And then he sort of, now he's getting in trouble because he's traversing the political sort of spectrum a little bit or something. Or
he's a lefty for sure.
Okay.
He just like, there's a couple things like he won't say that Trump's doing a bad job financially. Right. He kind of leaves it to that.
Yeah.
And, he really picks on the people that come on and say that, you know, Trump's a fascist or America's fascist and racist and that sort of thing. Like that's because he's like figures they're ruining the left. He just, I mean, honestly, to me, it's honestly, Shauna said last night, it's honestly like reality TV. It's basically like watching reality TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just like a sort of guilty pleasure. You don't get anything from it. It's really sort of the same thing. I mean, there's a basic premise. You listen to a few episodes, you get the just of debt. It's all about getting out of debt, really, is what it's supposed to be about. But it's just wrapped up in a bunch of drama and name calling and stuff like that.
That's
it's a good guilty pleasure, I guess, that I've been listening to lately. But I don't have any debt, so I'm lucky that way.
Yeah, you are lucky, yeah.
Well, that's what I've been doing, listening to that.
Thanks.
Working on the boats. And like I said, I mean, I got the Claude thing blew me away the other day because we got a secret launch coming up next week. We'll have more to say next week. It's launching on the 12th. A couple things launching on the 12th, but we got the one thing in particular launching on the 12th. And I had to update over 100 posts. So to update the titles so that they all match and then update the descriptions so they all sort of match. And I had done like, out of over 200, about 200, maybe 190, I'd done like 45 or something like that, but it just took forever. Boom, 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 copy, paste.
Because you got to go like copy, paste, right? Copy, paste, find it, go to the other thing, find it.
Find it. Yeah, that's the main thing is then I got to go in the document and find it because nothing's alphabetical anymore. So you're jumping.
No. Yeah.
So I say to the Claude, I say, there's got to be a better way. Can you do this? And it's like, well, there's no direct API for me to do it directly into school because I've got it hooked to my spreadsheet thing now so I can directly have it make spreadsheets.
Yeah, don't give up the, yeah.
So I...
Secret to our launch.
Yeah. So it's like, give me the... Install the Claude extension and then it's going to open up this other browser and you log into it in this browser and then I'll take it from there. So okay. I do all that. And I literally have this browser. You couldn't minimize it. This is where the three screens comes in handy again. Cause I had to, every time I minimized it, it shut down and I had to turn it back on. So I had to go in this third browser over here, this third thing, just this Chrome browser with an arrow moving around it, dude, like literally doing all the things I would do, except I couldn't see where it was copying the text from. I could only see when it pasted it because it was just copying the text out of its database. But it went through and it took it about an hour and a half. And it did 100.
That's it? An hour and a half?
Yeah, it was under 2 hours. It went through and did 145 posts.
Did it do it faster than you were doing it?
Yeah, way faster than I could do it because I had to go through the document to find the thing constantly.
I thought you said you had to leave it all night or something, or it was going to take all day.
Well, that's what I was going to do because it started out slow. It seemed like it started out slow, but then it picked up speed. By the end, it was sort of ding, ding. It was really going through.
As another data center was built, it just sped up?
Yeah, I don't know. What I was thinking, somebody's forest paid the price.
But you got to think there's some context there on the compute that you need. The compute that you have this thing doing for you all the time.
Either that or some like Indian dude is like...
in the background doing it all.
Remember how George used to log into our computers and you'd see him moving around and doing stuff? Yeah. Maybe it's just some dude in India doing that for me.
Yeah, imagine that.
But it just did it on this thing. Actually, it did it while we did a podcast or something, right? I think we did a show while we were doing the show. This thing's just going. And then it's just kept going, does it all. And I'm like, so you could, we're basically at the point where I could have this thing, like, say, for example, go through and change the title on every fucking Grammarica episode on the website. I could be like, here, change them all. Go through, change this and add this to the notes. I could log into my YouTube channel and just, I mean, I might, this might actually be the way for it to, the only problem is I can't think of a way to have it figure out which episode it's from, but this might be finally the way to have the, because the number one complaint we get on our shorts is there's no link to the original episode. And it's because we're producing so many shorts that there's just no way to do it with the robots yet. And manually, if we're going to do it manually, it's just time prohibitive to, you don't know when's coming out and what. So, and you know, it does get to a screen where you could easily just paste it into every single one, but it's after the schedule comes out. It's like, why wouldn't this be before the mass schedule? If you just had this screen, one screen earlier, then I could do it easily.
Oh, that'll happen sooner than later. Somebody's got to pick up on it.
I should actually message them.
Yeah, you should.
Mention it.
Yeah.
But the robot might be able to do it soon.
Yeah, maybe.
One of the most impressive things I've seen it do to date.
But it might be something where there's maintenance that you and I just don't do and we won't do ever. Like, for example, going back through all our old podcast episodes and putting fresh links so that if people go back to old episodes, I don't know if it's worth it, if hundreds of people are going back or thousands of people, but over 13 years, like none of those links are probably good, right? What?
Even some of the notes could use like upgrade.
Well, the notes are pretty good. The old notes are pretty good. But some of the links.
But the titles aren't. We kind of went through different. You can go through, because I've been transferring it all to Spotify. You can kind of go through and see the different eras. In the beginning,
you went back and fixed quite a few titles.
I thought I did, but then I was going through the website and they're just, you know what it was? I paid that chick to do it. She must have fucked it up.
What? That was back before the bots.
Before the bots. Wow. So it's like the first 100 apps or so, or 100 and some are like Grammarica talks to, and there's something like that. And then there's like,
then there's just the name only with no description.
A while of Grammarica talks, blah, blah, blah with someone. And then it switches to like just the name for a while.
And then the name and a subject.
And then to our current format.
Yeah. Which is what? The name and the subject, right? The number of the episode, the name, and then the subject.
Yeah.
Or a catchy title or whatever. Yeah. So like, for example, Nora's is... that tonight's episode will be called Nora Spinner, Netism, the Web of Reality and Cyclic Civilization. That should be pretty good. That's pretty good. That was me making that up myself, actually. What?
That'd be something I could do.
Yeah.
But now it just like changes the game for data entry. Now I can just like have it like, I can log it into something. The only thing is like, what's it doing with the stuff? Like, is it a safe move, say, to log into the back end of our
podcast feed?
Or
website, our podcast website. That,
the audiobook page, and being like, hey, log into the like report page and be like, here, go through all this and figure out what fucking, what's working, what's not, what we need more of. Kind of like we sort of did. We were both just sort of blown away by what we were able to have the robot do by uploading some
data
to it. Yeah.
Data.
Like, but now we could go into it and maybe just have it get its own data and figure out which data is most important.
Yeah. Yeah. The analytical side is pretty mind blowing because it's stuff that you would have to do, like for you to sort all that, clean up the spreadsheet, sort it all out, and then graph it all. It takes hours and hours, like literally would be hours and hours.
Yeah, and then you got to know what you're looking for.
Got to know what you're looking for.
It'd be more than hours and hours. I mean, it's just like, the fucking like Spotify pool report is like fucking 100 and some pages long of just like.
Yeah, it's almost not even.
Same title will be on there. 50 different times. Why? I don't know why. I think it's putting up there once per country.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Per demographic. So yeah. Here's the this age group's fucking numbers. Here's this age group's. Look, I don't give a fuck. I mean, maybe I should, but I'm not in charge of the marketing of Spotify, and I can't really affect it, so it doesn't matter to me. It's Spotify knows what demographics are listing, so it knows what demographics to put the content in front of, which is sort of the same thing as Audible. It's sort of like a black hole for, which is a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
But it's its own marketing mechanism where the algos just sort of take control. Same with YouTube, right? Yeah. How could you ever advertise a YouTube channel? Now, YouTube maybe has a little bit more because I think YouTube will let you give them money, which is
something
we never tried because we assume they'll just take our money and do nothing. Just whenever we tried something with Facebook.
So having said all that, we're launching something. It's being curated. Let's say the shelves are being curated right now and we're launching it in a week. So August 12th will be launch.
Global release party, global launch party.
And it's going to be called, I think we can say the name, right? Grimoire, the Grimoire. Grim as in Grimerica, you know, noir. No, it's not noir. It's war. Grimoire. What?
War.
War. And then we're also launching Pegs and Jokers. We can talk about the name of that and what it is. There's no surprise to that, but the website will come out. So we will start launching that next week as well, but it's going to be at, it's that card game where you move pegs around the board. It's kind of like Sorry and there's another, Hard Cheesy or something. Peg. Well, it's under a bunch of different names, but it's like Jokers and Pegs or Pegs and Jokers or Jokers and Marbles or the Joker's Wild or the Cult Game. What?
There's marbles involved?
Well, there can be, yeah. There's pegs. Pegs or marbles. You basically have a hand of five cards and you move around the board. You move out of your home, move around the board. You bump your allies. You bump your enemies to different places and you move around the board until you get all your pegs in a castle. So this is an online game. Basically it's a virtual board like you play with your family and your friends, but you can do it online now with
your family game. And your friends or for free. You could do it with your family and friends or with strangers.
Or with strangers, yeah.
And Graham, Graham loves this game for some reason. So you might bump into Graham in there. You might be able to play against Graham one day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'll play.
We're officially launching it on the 12th. It is pretty well ready. I mean, if this is something that you're extra excited about, spam Graham, email Graham, graham@grammerica.com, because we are doing a bunch of beta testing right now, trying to figure out. I mean, we've been beta testing it for what, a month and a half?
Working
out bugs and stuff like that. But some bugs you might not run into until we have more people testing it. So if you want to throw some time at and play some games.
This thing is working just like the real game. It's just like the real game. I mean, my mom played it. And if my mom can figure it out, she was really excited about it.
Yeah, there's a chat feature in there too, right? So you can chat with your friends while you're playing.
Yeah. But you can't cheat because it blocks out the cheating chats.
Blocks out the cheating chats.
Blocks out the cheating chats.
That's it. So people can stay tuned. For that we're going to officially launch that. They're both launching on the new moon 8 days from today, August 12th. We'll come around with that. And it's going to be exciting. Of course, I think we said we're going to do a launch party next Wednesday, right? We'll do a live stream for 2 or 3 hours, kind of going through a bunch of stuff and launching the curation.
Yeah.
The curation creation.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, I'm just double checking my notes, but I don't think we have anyone to thank. I mean, obviously we have our regular monthly supporters what's this? July 27th. Now we did Paul Arson. Oh, I'm not supposed to say his last name. We did Paul. Sir Lord Paul. Lord Paul, he's coming. He says he's coming. We'll see. but he says he's coming. Of course, Lord Tony's coming. Lord Johnny's coming. Lord Paul's coming. Possibly Lord Nick's coming. And now maybe even rumors that Lord Trevor might come down for a couple of days during the hunt.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
And Keith is coming, of course.
As well. I see. I got to make an appearance to that with all those awesome people. It's going to be so much fun.
I believe Marc Andre is a pretty big fan of the show as well. So you got to have to come down. You got to get the camper working and bring it down.
I got to get it working. I know. It's, I don't know. It's almost there. I have to clean the sticky stuff off the counters. Like I've tried two different cleaners. It's still like I can actually rub it off with my hand, but we have some cosmetic stuff to do, but I also have to fix the leaks in the water system now too. And hopefully the propane's working properly. We'll see, but otherwise should be okay.
Yeah. I still got to put my hot water tank in. I don't even have it yet. I never went and picked it up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, hot water doesn't bug me too much because you can boil it so quickly. You can make hot water pretty quickly. It makes so little hot water. It makes about three times what I can make in my biggest pot, and it does do it a little quicker. I will give it that. But it's also just another moving part, more heat.
But it's also heater too. I mean, we have an electric heater that does a little bit in the roof. In the ceiling, but I think it's going to be more. It was like 6 degrees this morning here. It was cold this morning. So like, if I was camping, I would have needed a heater probably.
Yeah. If you're plugged in, if you have power, then you just, the electric heaters are good.
What like not separate electric heaters.
Yeah. Like I got a plug in heater. I got two plug in heaters for mine.
Oh, I feel like though it would just break down. I couldn't even have that.
It won't run on 12 volt. You have to be plugged in either to shore power or to a generator.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
But what I have, I don't have a furnace. I have a diesel heater that I built into a compartment in my storage unit, in the storage cupboard. So I have a little compartment in my storage cupboard in the thing where I can exhaust it out the side. It like comes out with a little stand that holds the exhaust up so it ain't touching anything, goes out the side with it wrapped in a thing. And then it blows the hot air into the camper from there. Hmm. And that's only 12 volts. Super light on power too.
Hmm.
That seems to be the best.
Why not just use a propane heater?
Well, there just wasn't one in there.
Okay.
And I just closed off all those vents and floored over them because I just don't want to fuck around with whatever.
Okay. Because, that's mine still. I have to connect the vents. They were disconnected, so I have to connect the hoses back up for some reason.
Yeah, I could have gone, but I don't want to, unskirt mine and everything. And I was just like, I'm not interested anyway. I'll just run this diesel heater. Then it's just cheaper. Diesel's cheap. Yeah. It's in my truck. It's 12 volts. And I could also use that diesel heater. Works well in ice fishing shack or something like that as well.
Yeah.
Dandy little unit.
Yeah.
The dandy little unit. All right. Well, no one thing. I mean, you can do better than that.
Yeah.
Thanks to Nora for coming to the show. Do you have a bio?
Yeah, I do. Yep. She's the author of The Young Man and the Sage and The 12 Pillars of Atum. Her work and research explores consciousness, lost history, netism, a framework built around the proposition that the individual mind participates in a larger field of relationship and information. She examines how fragments of older philosophical and cosmological systems may survive catastrophe, cultural suppression, and the loss of written language. Netism.org. There's a link there in the show notes. Yeah.
It's a great chat.
And yeah, check out their website and what they're doing over there. It's really good. It really does fit in with a lot of our cyclical catastrophic chat and a lot of Randall's work and Hancock and all that kind of stuff, but also from a consciousness and spirituality angle as well.
There you have it, guys. We hope you do enjoy the chat with Nora Spinner. Mostly enjoy that chat, but also support the show. Let's try and get at least one fucking person next week, maybe two people. I don't know. At this point, we'd be better off building boats. Maybe it's still all the boat talk, all the repair talk, too much repair talk. support the show. We love you guys.
Nora Spinner, welcome to Grimerica. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. We're going to talk about netism. It's quite fascinating, really. It's kind of right up our alley recently with cyclical cataclysms and ancient civilization, stuff like that. So, thanks for joining us. This is going to be fun. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with netism in general, just at a real high level, or more about you on how you started it or how you got interested in all this?
So I'll explain the basics of what netism is. It's the philosophy of interconnection. So it's a field-based connection, and it's consciousness. So netism isn't new. It's actually a new name for a very old system. So that's kind of what we're going to be getting in today, is the history of what we're trying to bring back, because really it's a recollection. The things that we've discussed, it's in ancient religions, and we're pulling back even further past what modern memory typically remembers.
Yeah. How did you get into it yourself?
So I've kind of always been interested in this stuff. I've looked into a lot of different areas of the occult. And when I started looking into ancient religion, that's when it really all started clicking. So it's not just me. It's a few other people, and we've been doing this together, pulling different things out. And collecting them into this database and then bringing it out to the public, because we're trying to bring as many different fields of insight as we can, because no single person has all the answers.
Yeah. Yeah. And it encompasses a whole bunch of different sciences, right? Medicine, physics, spirituality.
Right. So to the ancients, medicine, science, spirituality was all connected. And that's really what we're trying to grasp at. So we call it the source field. It's this unified field. So basically everything was in stasis, and every expression is just motion in a different form. So we're trying to track the same kind of unified science that the ancients did. So to us, spirituality is a science, and we're trying to put that back into a way where it's not just a bunch of hearsay. There's a formula to it.
Yeah. So what was the ancient religion that you sort of that tweaked your interest and got you into this?
So for me, it's ancient Egypt. I've researched a lot of it. Ancient Hinduism is very close, but for me, it really clicked with ancient Egypt. And I think that's just because I had past life memories there. And I know people for whom it's the Mayans, or for whom it's ancient India. So we've all weaving these different threads together, and we're seeing the similarities.
Can you touch on some of those similarities? I mean, yeah, I know that's pretty much the big, that's like part of the big, really big question, a big portion of the work, I'm sure.
Yeah, so weaving really is the similarity. It's the sense of interconnection. So ancient religions, they went by the law of one. And it's one field, one expression. So it may look differently in different parts of the world with different cultures and different groups, but they still may use the spiral or the eye or the pyramid, and they're still looking at life as continuous, different expressions in different ways of the same spiritual understanding. So you see a lot of different places they had medicine circles where they walked around counterclockwise. You know, that was the progression of the seasons. And these are different fragmented memories of this unified spirituality, which was before the cataclysm.
So where do we want to go from here? So I want to get into like before the cataclysm, that whole document you sent me, which was like 10 or 11 pages, was fascinating. It was the time before the last great cataclysm. So the last great cataclysm, I guess, was there previous ones? Like how far back do you guys in Netism think that advanced civilization goes, I guess? I mean, that's
a pretty big question. Right. So we say that humanity went through several cycles and each cycle forgets the past. So the last great cataclysm was around the Younger Dryas period. That's when the shift happened after, we say, a comet impact. And Randall Carlson is a great source for that. He's really done the science on where the evidence for that argument is. So we're saying that really shifted humanity. Humanity was focused on survival. Some of the ancient stuff was kept, but the meaning was lost. And so before the cataclysm, humanity had a kind of unified consciousness. And after that fragmentation happened, after everybody was focused on survival and they forgot the science, you know, people who remembered it were spread out and they weren't teaching it in schools. You know, people just lost the information after a few generations. And then it took a couple thousand years for that information to slowly weave back into the field.
Yeah. And when it did weave back in, did they realize, because it kind of fits in with what, like a lot of this just makes comments, it makes sense to me. Like it really resonates just from the stuff that we've been talking about. So after did they realize that these civilizations existed before, like when they started to see things that were like built previously, like for example, I think of the granite work, some of the cyclopean architectures, the way I kind of like to describe that architecture to me, that means the previous to these people realizing bits and pieces of this information.
Yeah. To the Egyptians, it was called Septepi, which was the first time. So they called it the time of the gods. And they had all these stories about Septepi where they found the pyramids. So the pyramids used to be full of, surrounded by lush life, lots of vegetables. They had stories about, you know, plants that were as tall as a man. So that was during a different period of time. And it's, you can look it up, called the Green Sahara Hypothesis. And that was before the comet impact and before we saw this major geological shift. So the pyramids were built at this time when the Nile was a lot closer to the pyramids. And then after the fragmentation, when they recovered the information, they were looking at it a different way. So they didn't have the same kind of unified consciousness as the people did beforehand. So they had to interpret it. They didn't have the translations. They were going through the hieroglyphs and trying to understand it.
So did they see, is there examples? Have you come across examples, not just Egypt, but anywhere where they've seen these like megalithic works and they've thought, okay, this was from an ancient civilization, and they started building on it layer upon layer, whatever afterwards. But I seem to feel like they realized that there was advanced civilization. Like I feel like they realize that more than we do now, you know?
I think the Mayans have some of the best examples of this with the step pyramids. And if you ask the people who live in these areas, they will still tell you that these came from an older civilization and that they found them. And they may have a lot of different stories about who these people were. Those came down and it really got turned into myth after the Great Forgetting. After just a few generations, after nobody had lived through that or knew anybody who had lived through that, you know, stories just continue and get exaggerated.
Yeah, yeah. Darren, do you have any questions at all? Do you want to get into some of the, like, going back further? I'd like to sort of ask about, like, how connected it was back then, but do you have any anything specific to what you've been researching lately?
Well, no, just no evidence of anything between now and the younger Dryas, then nothing. Because it does seem like there might be something, maybe 5,000, maybe even 6,500 years ago, and then something else. I was even wondering if maybe when we were talking to Jared, if 2000, you know, that BC AD divide isn't another sort of cataclysm.
I don't know, but Nupta Playa is one of the earliest periods where we start to see civilization kind of reform together. And I think that was around like 8,700 BC. And I could be totally wrong about that, but I think it was around that time.
So do you think there was another, like some people say there was a flood, there was the original deluge, Younger Dryas, and then Noah's flood was after that, like 5,000 or 6,000 years ago?
I don't know enough to back that story up. So it could totally be, I'm just not sure.
Yeah, yeah. What about the you said it was a unified, I can't remember if you used the word consciousness or whatever, but so this past pre-Younger Dryas civilization, it was global, unified, advanced, using tools and technology much differently than we think of it as. Is that
differently? Yes, and that is the key word. So everything was centered on coherence. So their spirituality was based on coherence, and population sizes were a lot smaller. So you have to think about how they would produce things. So there was no means to mass produce things, but this is where alchemy really has its roots, and it's the it's chemistry as well as like a spiritual science, understanding of geometry, understanding of resonance, and how to blend all those fields together.
Darren, let me jump into this. So I'm narrating this book right now, from Eric Anthony, and, it's talking about, one of the chapters is kind of about this cyclical reset, and he talks about it in a consciousness way, and it really seems to fit with your theory as well, but I can't really describe what he thinks of it as. Like there's a planetary new sphere, like a collective unconscious, and that this reset is also related to the noetic part of us. So I'm going to read you this, see what you think, a couple quotes from this chapter that I'm just editing like today, actually. So he's talking about the persistence of this idea across cultures is itself anomalous. So civilizations separated by oceans and millennia speak of a golden age, a time before a great destruction, when humanity lived closer to the gods, possessed sacred knowledge, and enjoyed harmony with the earth. This theme is not isolated myth, but a recurring memory structure embedded in the collective unconscious.
Yes, and I look to the Yuga cycles for this. Yeah. There is a book who has a different timeline for the Yuga cycles, and I look at this as not necessarily conflicting with the larger timescale, but as a lower harmonic. And the way they describe it is in a 24,000 year cycle, and so the last golden age ended at the time of the last cataclysm. And it was this slow drift. And we entered into Kali Yuga around, I think, 500 BCE. And then it was 1,000 years. And so we slowly started climbing out of it at the Renaissance. So we just had this period of this dark age where humanity just stopped seeking spiritual answers. Authority took over. And we just couldn't get out of that. And we couldn't get out of this materialist mindset. Now, it's saying that we have shifted into Dwapara, which is the age of energy. And it's slightly more coherent. And you see the shift happen with the technical age. And you also see it happen with the New Age movement, people looking into consciousness. Because before, you know, consciousness was just something that you didn't look into and you didn't even question God. But now people are looking at all these different forms of spirituality again. And that's part of why Netism, you know, is this name is just a name, but why this philosophy is rising up again, because it's becoming active in the field again.
Yeah.
So when more people lock onto these types of ideas, it becomes even larger in the field. So that's really what we're trying to get the conversation going about again.
Yeah. I like how you described it as a current. It was easy for me to visualize. Like it's almost like a metaphysical current that gets strengthened as the more of us think about it, the more it becomes part of our consciousness that the current gets strengthened. And the current's always there, I guess, from the past, but then we can kind of resonate with that current and it can build back.
Yes. We, current is a specific name that we use in our ways of speaking about the net. So a thread happens from person to person. So right now we're sending threads to each other while we're talking, but a current is something that happens with a lot of nodes, like a lot of spirituality is a form of a current and it's going on in the past, just like it's going on in the present. And we can tap into it and make it more active in the field in present day.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, here's the other quote that I want to read you. This is kind of more about the noetic part. So he says, each reset was not merely geological or biological, but noetic. An interruption and recalibration of consciousness itself. Civilizations rose to the thresholds of remembrance only to collapse before integration was complete. Memory was fractured, mythologized, and buried beneath catastrophe.
That is perfect wording for what we describe. Memory was fractured. It was fractured all over the place. And what they could recover, they couldn't understand completely. Because, say, take the Egyptian language. They spoke through symbols, and each symbol spoke on three levels. And the way that consciousness was looking at it after it fractured was it was looking at it literally. You know, that's when we started giving literal offerings, you know, physical offerings, because that's what we could understand. Whereas before it was a means of moving the spirit. And we look at the pyramids as, you know, they could be tombs and some of them were used as tombs later on. But we can't understand the structure, the geometry of temples that they're using when they were using it for spiritual reasons, for the movement of the field that we're just starting to grasp again today.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So are you pretty confident that we're going to grasp it? Like, are you pretty confident that it's reaching a point where the currents are large enough that they're kind of going to grab hold?
I think absolutely. I think people already are grasping it. Slowly but surely, there's always outliers of the field, and these outliers are the ones that are dragging us upwards. So yeah, we want to give a voice to all the people who are locating it, because not all of them have a voice yet, and not all of them are famous. So
yeah,
they are out there.
And you guys are gathering all this work, all this information from so many different layers specific, what's the word I'm looking for? Like professions really, or industries even. But so how do you vet for it? Like, how do you put it all together? Yeah. Nodes almost, but I didn't want to use nodes again because she used it previously.
Passion for it. It's passion and looking into all of these different avenues. I mean, philosophy, metaphysics, actual physics, it all comes together. And you can see the connections when you have the love for it. When you're looking at it just from like a logical standpoint, you might not see it. But when you're looking for it, the pieces just come together.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Was there any kind of talked about the different ages and the golden ages and stuff like that. Is there any, what do you make of the differences in lifespan and those sort of different things? It's like, it seems to be, I believe some of them at least talk about longer lifespans outside of the Bible, maybe the Vedas. I'm not sure.
So this is an interesting question, because what we're looking at this is actually that time itself is stretching and slowing down. So like time is related to the universe's expansion. So it could be the universe was expanding more rapidly, you know, many cycles ago. And that's why we see people who have, say, 600 years, you know, 600 years old, where really they're like 60 years old. Time is still progressing the same way, but the clocks are moving faster.
Huh. Yeah, I have a hard time picturing that one, because just recently I've finally, something's clicked about time being sacred, you know, to do with the rotation of the solar system and stuff like that. Like our mechanics of the solar system sort of have to do with the elements of time that we've used to measure things. So I'm trying to picture now if it sped up, what would happen? Like if it was connected to the mechanics of the solar system, then how that would work.
So think of it this way. So time, the clocks are going clockwise while the universe is expanding. While it's contracting, the clocks will go counterclockwise, but you and I would still be moving in the same way. It's not like we would be aging in reverse. It's just the way in which we're tracking measurement.
Yeah. So what about, I want to ask about like giants and red haired people and Rh negative blood. But Darren mentioned lifespan. So do you guys, I don't think I noticed stuff about giants in there. Do you guys approach that at all, especially because you talk about the megafauna? So do you see evidence of giants or do you stay away from that?
This isn't something that we've gotten into yet, but I mean, I would say that yes, within the former cycles, it's definitely, I'd say with the evidence that people are discovering that it's been suppressed, that it could be very likely that there were giants and other, you know, forms of humanity in the former cycles.
Yeah, because it's weird that you mentioned all the megafauna, and we talk about maybe there was some sort of different sort of makeup of the atmosphere or something that enabled things to grow bigger.
Well, we saw huge amounts of extinctions with the Younger Dryas period. So that's what I was talking about is, you know, we don't really know everything that came from the former cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, so many different examples there. What about bloodlines and either Rh negative blood or red hair? Kind of like there's some traits that seem to that people talk about, you know, having like ancient bloodlines, that kind of stuff.
That's something I don't know anything about. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah, the Rh negative, the Basque people. It seems like there's some ancient descendants there. Like they might be like holdovers from these ancient civilizations.
What are the? I mean, so they was it just a comet impact? Do they unpack that anymore? What is there any sort of how does the comet impact? I'm assuming is in North America. How does that affect the Sahara, stuff like that?
So right, so it was in the northern hemisphere, and it impacted a glacier. So when it impacted that glacier, it resulted in a large amount of flooding. Randall Carlson points to stories of dragons as fiery descending beings coming down from the sky and making this big roar sound as it impacts the earth. And I think that's a good way of picturing it as just fire descending into the glacier and then the glacier resulting in the worldwide flooding.
Anything from the Africa? Because Darren, that kind of fits in with yours thing, right? The glacier hitting or the impact hitting the Laurentide ice sheet. and then possibly the flood in Africa too, right?
Yeah, well, there definitely seems to be evidence of flood in Africa and giant slide complexes off the West Coast, seemingly at the same time as the Younger Dryas.
If they looked into the Sahara with the technology that we have now, I think they would find some really incredible things.
Yeah. Yeah. Like what you mean, like with LIDAR, that kind of stuff? Or
yes. Yes. Yeah.
What do you think they would find in the Sahara?
Oh, lots of civilization. I think that, right, that impact pushed all of these people out, if they survived, out towards Egypt. Yeah. The rest of, you know, it was a different place then. It really shifted the earth around.
Literally, like, shifted the crust?
I don't know enough about of when the shifts happened to tell you that.
Yeah, that's a good question. In general, the netism, would you take in a pole shift into account as well? Or is it really just you're sticking to the Younger Dryas, like the Randall Carlson type hypothesis that something, a cataclysm happened, but the pole didn't shift necessarily?
I would say the pole has probably shifted before, but not at that exact moment.
So how would you guys, if we gave you evidence, or not us, but, you know, like if it became a current of this evidence became part of our consciousness, how would you guys adopt your theory to that? Like if it was both the impact, which caused the pole shift, which flipped the pole, like, would you guys be able to update netism to that, or how would that work?
Well, of course we would update it. I mean, we're a fluid philosophy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Really the history doesn't play a huge part on how we practice our day-to-day life.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great to remember it, but the point in remembering it is to practice it, to focus your life around coherence and understand why. You know, if somebody doesn't accept our history, they can still be a netist without any type of issue. You know, it's
And I'm not questioning you guys. I'm just trying to wonder. Yeah. I'm just wondering how the whole thing fits together. You know, because I think the most interesting part for me is how the advanced civilization would have worked. Like you in your writings there, when you talk about combining, you know, the sciences and the technology with spiritual stuff and consciousness, and the way you say that these might be found now as sort of incoherent or passive instruments, but back then they were sort of active. And we talk about this grant, like, to me, one of the most prominent physical aspects of the evidence that's going to come out in the future is all this granite work, like from Egypt and, you know, Peru. And I mean, all the spots where you see these scoop marks and people working with granite, I think there was some sort of advanced technology, not necessarily mechanical. It could have been alchemical or sonic or whatever it was. Something stopped. They stopped working at it at some point. But I love the way how you guys write that down as consciousness, as technology, or how it might have been found later on. Like even so you guys had the Bogosphere, the Vajra, the thunderstorm generator, which we can talk about from Malcolm Bendall. But you say the operator, device, chamber, landscape, celestial timing, and gathered community formed one complete system. So I think we're going to come to the point where we realize like how this granite work was done all over the world, you know, for whenever. Now, whether that was like the civilization right before the Younger Dryas, or maybe even like one or two cycles back, like it could go back farther than we think.
Yeah, there was something with the architecture where the architecture was the technology, and we're just starting to grasp that.
Yeah. With the sacred geometry, Randall's, again, going back to a lot of the stuff goes back to Randall's work on the cathedral building and all that. Like there was a knowledge that seemed to be, you know, maybe even the cathedral builders had some of this knowledge in the Templar. Well,
our best guess, I mean, as far as the official opinion is concerned, is that they wanted to record this information in the measurements. But I think it goes a lot deeper than that. There is something about these measurements that causes that structure to align with the greater field.
Yes. So
and
that gets in the...
Sorry, if we could start building our technology that way, it might run a lot better.
Like Malcolm's stuff, for example.
Like Malcolm's. And Bedini's another source for that, too. Why we're not running motors like Bedini's magnetic motor, I don't know.
Yeah.
How does that work? How does the magnetic motor work, roughly?
I'm not the best person to explain it. I've researched it, but I'm not the best person to explain it. It's he aligns the magnetism so that it's feeding each other to turn instead of working against itself. It's all about the measurements and how he cuts his magnets.
Yeah, John Bedini, right, I think?
Yes.
Yeah, it is quite fascinating. And I mean, that's kind of what Malcolm's work was too, is like, if you make it in these sacred dimensions, then it has a resonance or a way to, you mentioned it, or I can't remember what word you used, coherence, you know, there's a coherence to it.
I think that wouldn't apply to electricity, is, you know, it does.
Yeah. I'm going to just quickly do a search here and see what it says about that Bedini thing. Do you have any way, can you describe Malcolm Bendel's thunderstorm generator in your words, or how it fits in with your natism?
So what he's using it, how he makes it work, is both through the materials and through the geometry. So I'm actually in the process of writing my second book, To the Young Man and the Sage. That's my first book. The second book, I'm going in through somebody's trying to understand how to build technology to save the planet. So I've been looking into Malcolm's work to understand how the geometry works to, you know, create that coherence within the field, the tori, and get these
transmutations. Transmutations?
The transmutations, the plasma, the plasmoids. The plasmoids, right. Yeah. Get the plasmoids to create within the chamber.
Yeah. So the Bedini here was a controversial electromechanical device. So he said it operates on this is just a basic search, so it's just the mainstream, but it operates on a pulsed electromagnetic induction using a rotor with permanent magnets and a coil circuit to create the back EMF effect that proponents claim can charge secondary batteries while the primary drive battery maintains operational.
Right. The pulsing is the key point there. He said that timing is everything. So it's about timing that electric pulse, because the source field or ether, whatever you want to call it, is at this stasis. But voltage, which is a longitudinal pulse, disrupts that. So he's creating that disruption and then capturing that rebalancing.
I've always wondered why they couldn't just make the one bat tires charge the other ones, you know? Like, if you're only using one drive wheel anyway, that should leave you three. Should have like a 3-to-1 charging ratio. You'd think we could
there's a lot more efficient ways we could be doing things.
Do you have any examples of other things that are being maybe suppressed or not used properly?
As far as in the modern age, I'm not sure. I've looked into the Searle effect generator. That's another device that's, you know, worthy of looking into. No, I mean, there's a lot of fraudulent devices out there. Don't trust anything you read. People like to throw out a lot of terms like morphic field or scalar waves and trust that people don't know what it means. So definitely look at the people, you know, John Bedini, who does know it. Listen to what they say. There's a lot of resources online on YouTube where you can find that information out.
You're muted, Graham.
Yeah, it says here, Bedini's later writings and private communications touched on consciousness, scalar waves, and the nature of energy that align with metaphysical concepts often associated with sacred geometry. Because people were talking about him using like phi ratios and the golden ratio and stuff in the physical design of the stator coils and the timing of the pulses, which could enhance the device's efficiency.
There you go. You should build one.
Yeah, a lot of these engineers who are legit put their information out there. Like Malcolm Bendel puts all of his information out there for you to see. You can look up the Energy from the Vacuum series. That's Bedini's. And Malcolm's got all of his online on strikefoundation.earth.
Yeah. So, have you seen anything of Malcolm recently at all, or how do you think that whole thing's going so far?
I haven't been looking into it recently. I've been working on a different book, so I haven't been keeping up with them. But I fully support, you know, them getting out there. They get a lot of pushback, and I just think as people struggle to understand how geometry could affect something. And that's, you know, kind of what we want to spread the knowledge about is, you know, geometry is a spiritual science, one of many.
And they mentioned it in the seven sacred arts and sciences back in Hermeticism, that the geometry is the number one, the first one, the most important of them all. I mean, that's amazing in itself that they would say that thousands of years ago.
So we say our principle of resonance is Netheru, and it's the law of formative resonance. And we say that geometry and resonance are compatible terms, because if you look into the science of sound, cymatics, you will see how resonant tones have balanced form. And that when you're looking at these geometries like mandalas, what you're looking at is these imprints of sound. Of these resonant tones. Non-resonant tones have jagged forms, but resonant tones are balanced.
Yeah. So just jumping back to go ahead, Derek.
Those temples in India seem like they could be three-dimensional mandalas, like a mandala is a two-dimensional representation of something.
Yeah, I've actually looked into some temple blueprints, just as, you know, some of my research writing articles and stuff, and you see how they lay it out if you look at the blueprint like a schematic, and it's the science of energy is in there.
You guys mentioned a little bit about the stonework, the I don't know if it's granite work or just stonework or the megalithic stuff. And you mentioned a variety of ways that it could be done. Like I think you mentioned, I can't remember the name of it now, pouring it, or you mentioned sound. Do you have any thoughts yourself personally about how some of this stuff was made back then?
Yeah, I think that pouring it is the most reasonable and understandable method out there as far as the theories go. You know, as far as the general size of the stones, it would be a lot easier to pour very large stones and to line them up to fill those crevices, you know, to make the, to keep them aligned if you're pouring it, than if you're cutting them to that and lifting them up there. So if they're lifting it, they'd use a lot smaller stones. And when you're looking at the ball reliefs, you know, where the stone is protruded out, that it's really very difficult to do that with a hand and chisel, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. But if they were pouring this in there, then it would be a lot easier just to use a mold, and it would still be work, but it would be a lot less work than trying to lift these major boulders.
What about the ones in Peru where they're so, like, I mean, every single mold would be different and super intricate and kind of folded over on each other? And I also push back on that a little bit in Egypt, because I feel like if they would have molded them, they would have just molded them and they would have been done. They wouldn't have had to come back and finish them. I mean, there's clear evidence in the Assyrian that they've finished it twice, once vertically and then again gone back horizontally. And that's just in one corner of the series, and the rest of it is unfinished, I guess, is what you could call it. And the we have this evidence of the same thing on the smallest pyramid on the plateau, where there's sections of it on at least two or three of the sides, where there's, you know, a 40 foot by 40 foot section that's completely smooth casing stones, and everything around that is still kind of bubbly and out there. And it's been, so I just wonder why they would pour it and then remove 18 inches of its face after, instead of just pouring
or 12 them. Or 12.
Sorry. I think the evidence there is saying that they were trying to remove the casing stones, and maybe they got tired. I mean, they definitely had the casing stones to me say that they were there because they were pouring them. That's how I'm reading it.
So it's easier to pour and scrape with some technology afterwards than just like quarry them specifically. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't know. My thought is the nubs are left over. Are just my theory is that that's just what the last part that's quarried, like whatever tool they're using to remove all that granite, the block that they're getting with whatever shape, odd shape that is, where they all seem to be unique shapes. The only thing that's left holding in the quarry is like the two nubs or however many nubs they use. And then they kind of break those off and then the block is gone. So the nubs are like the last remaining piece, but that's just my own weird little theory about it. What about connecting to ley lines and the energy of the planet? I think there's something in your writings there about like they used these sacred dimensions and stuff, and that's part of how the ancients kind of their goals.
So yeah, we track before the Younger Dryas period, there was a series of monoliths that were built with the intent to balance the Earth's magnetic energy. Balance the Earth's fields, because they were seeing a lot of flood waters rising during that period of time. So they sensed the cycles turning. So that's also why they put all that information in there, is they were trying to prepare for what was coming. And the large monoliths were technology that could function when their builders were long gone, because they were functioning due to their size and due to their materials. They didn't need somebody there driving it.
That was the pre-Younger Dryas monoliths?
Yes. So the Giza pyramids would be one of those. I can't think on the top of my head as what the other ones were, but there are six that we had named at some point that were built before the Younger Dryas period. In preparation for the turning of the cycles.
Yeah, I'd love to know what six of those are. It'd be interesting to try and guess that.
I don't have them in my notes, and I would probably guess the wrong names. Right
yeah,
now,
yeah,
so, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't want to tell you.
Anchor Wat came to my mind, but I bet you they're spread out. Are they spread out all over the world, kind of thing?
They were spread out. Yes.
Yeah. So, what about your books? Do you want to mention your books at all?
Yeah, so I've got one book published right now, The Young Man and the Sage. It's a philosophical book. It's told almost entirely through dialogue. And it's a fiction that walks you through a lot of our philosophy. So it's a fun book to read. One of my ARC reviewers is a philosophy teacher, and he started using it to teach in his class because he says it teaches without jargon. So if you want to learn our stuff, and you don't want to learn, you know, the nonfiction technical stuff, which is the stuff I'm writing now, is definitely worth checking out. And it's on Amazon. And our website is netism.org. That's netism.org. And you can see all of the stuff about our basics to our spirituality, how geometry and cycles play into that.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool website. Very, very informative and in depth. What's the book you're working on now? Did you do the 12 Pillars of Atum as well, or remembering?
Yeah, so it's a collective work. So I don't put my name on that because it belongs to Netism. But yep. Yes, yep. I was part in writing that.
And the remembering as well?
Yes. So these are little booklets that are available free online on netism.org. You can listen to them. So you can put the tracks into a player, listen to it while you're driving. We try to make it as accessible as we can.
And then the one you're making is nonfiction.
So I'm working on the Life Cycles book right now, and I'm trying to get that out within the next few months. And that's going to be another netism property book that's going to be available to the public. So that's something that you definitely want to stay tuned for.
Can you get into that a little bit, the life cycles?
Yeah. So we look at consciousness first as self-organization. So we tie consciousness to life energy, and we track it from basically tiny minute particles, or the underlying expressions of those particles, all the way through through cells, through animals, through humans, into the ethereal regions, and even into planets and universe. So we're looking at consciousness not necessarily as awareness and all of these things. In the lower cycles, it's definitely just self-organization and following the patterns. So we're looking at it as a evolution of patterns.
Okay. Do you have any predictions at all? I mean, we're in a fantastic time where we're hearing about so many different things, and ancient mysteries is one of those things that seems to be getting blown up right now. Like, there's all kinds of stuff in there about Atlantis and even cataclysms and pole shifts. What, do you have any predictions of the future about how things are going to play out here in the next little while in this age of reveal that we're in?
I think we're definitely in a turbulent time. I forget who it was, the name of the person who looked through a lot of different remote viewers to look at 2050 and 2060. And what the remote viewer consensus was is that we're going to see some major political shifts. We're going to see some shifts in healthcare, shifts, lots of stuff happening in America, but it will balance out. We're going to go through a lot of chaos, but it will eventually be for the better. Eventually we're going to have United Healthcare stuff like that. We're going to be at a more even pace.
Yeah. Hopefully not as bad as Canada's. You learn from Canada's mistakes if you do that.
Power is in there too. They expect we're going to find renewable energy within, the next 20, 30 years. And I hope so, because our planetary crisis is bad.
Yeah, I think that Malcolm and some of these inventors are on the right track. I think it's got to come out. I mean, I don't think they can hold this stuff anymore,
I think changing the public support for it could be enough too, because there's people out there who have figured this out. There's many of them. A lot of them get suppressed, and there's definitely a big pushback with people who are making money off of it. Yeah. But once the public feeds into it and stops calling everything a scam, I think that we could eventually change.
Yeah. Are you guys in the US?
Yes.
Is netism based in the US or globally, or?
We would like to be global. But right now we're based in the US.
Yeah.
How many members do you have, or how many people are in it, or what's the sort of organizational?
So we're a small local group right now. We're building the online platform. We've just built an online social media, but we haven't populated it yet. So the platforms are being built. We're building our social media, livingnetism.com, which is actually a nonprofit. So we're building this so people aren't getting confronted with ads. We've reduced political content. We make groups about like spiritual topics, like where can you go to discuss past life memories or dreams, or, gardening with regenerative agriculture, electroculture, all of these things. There's an open platform for that. We try to curb the negativity and give people a space.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I mean, I'm just looking at your cosmology section here. Like, you've got the science behind the veil, zero point energy, chaos, quantum entanglement, the Schumann resonance, holographic principle, the Higgs mechanism, morphic resonance, longitudinal waves, ether, neural motion, the physics of Hecka. Hecka? Hecka?
Hecka, yes.
Yeah.
That's our energy weaving system.
Energy leaving?
Weaving, I'm sorry. Oh, weaving.
Your
threads of intention. Yeah. The practice of netism, yes.
Yeah. Is there stuff that we haven't talked about yet that you want to mention before we let it go?
I think I've covered the basics with going on to netism.org. Definitely stay tuned because we're in the building phase right now. So we're looking for people who are willing to hop on and help us build. We're a diverse platform, and we value people from all different kinds of backgrounds and perspectives.
Maybe mention the three laws.
The three laws, yes. So free will is our first law. So that is basically like a person, everybody is here because they need to grow. And a person can't grow if they're forced into the right decision. So your choices are sacred. And to try to impose your will on another, it forces you into a state of decoherence. So it breaks our goals of spirituality. So that's why free will is the first law, because that just basically destroys our whole spiritual system and what we're trying to build. Minimize harm is the second. The world is a dangerous place. You definitely have to defend yourself, but you definitely don't want to contribute to the danger and the negativity of the field. So absolutely never causing harm is impossible, but minimizing harm is part of our basic tenets. And the last one is unity. Unity is our overall philosophy. And we basically, netism is the living as if you are connected to everything, because you are. Your thoughts, how you feel about other people and yourself affect your field. How you act towards others, these little minute interactions that we do daily, a lot of people don't think that they matter, but a real common consensus of people who have near-death experiences and go through the life review is that they see all of these little moments where they were maybe disengaged, or maybe, they didn't take the time to appreciate that's what matters. So that's really what unity is about, is taking the present with the moment now, seeing you're here in this experience. What are the people around you telling you? Because you don't have all the answers. Somebody else's perspective can help you see things a different way. You don't have to agree with it, but give them the respect.
Yeah. Is that document that you sent me, like the Lost World, the time before the last great cataclysm, is that on your website as well somewhere, or parts of it at least?
So if you look under the history of netism,
yep.
There should be a tab. Yeah. Yep. So that covers some of our history.
Right. Okay. Perfect. Yeah. The night the world ended, the web that remembers the mounds and the sages, the black land. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good overview of it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Is there anything we didn't get to that we should have got to, or anything we left on the table that we didn't mention that needs mentioning before we start to wrap up?
I think, did you guys have any questions for me about netism or what we do or any of the things I mentioned today?
I don't think so. I think just the foundations really seems to fit with what we're talking about with ancient, the ancient history and stuff and the time before the cataclysm. So yeah, I think it's good. Yeah. It makes sense. Darren, any questions?
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. No, this is good.
Yeah. Keep it up. Let us know as you guys keep going and growing. And
Yeah.
We'll yeah, absolutely.
Up. Yeah. Maybe we'll see on one of our Randall trips. We got a couple with him coming up in the fall, one in Finger Lakes in New York, and he's doing sacred geometry and checking out the scab lands from the last cataclysm in October, I think, or is it September? Aaron.
We do have a question in the chat of where is netism? You mentioned it was local. Is there someplace? So we do have listeners all over America. So is there people? Are you looking for local people?
So right now we're in Texas. We would like to build hubs all over, the United States first, because that's where we're based out of. We'd like to build them globally. There's an event coming up called Medicine for the People. It's a spiritual gathering. So that's going to be our first physical gathering. It's an event that's been going on for a while. I advise you check it out if you're in Texas. If you search Medicine for the People, you can find it.
All right.
Excellent. Nora Spinner, thank you for coming on the show. Keep up the good work and come back at any time. It looks like you might just have to hang out in the lobby for a little bit while your Riverside finishes uploading. But thank you for coming on the show and come back. All right.
Yeah.
So can I hit leave and then
keep and the then
window
you can,
open?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Let us know when your next book. Let us know when you finish your book too.
Yeah, definitely. I'll stay in touch. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. I like the chalkboard. And that was a chat with Nora Spinner. What'd you think?
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. Check out the website. It's pretty fascinating.
That was a fun one. Check out the website. Join the thing. Start a hub. You could be a hub leader.
Yeah.
And help this thing grow. Big thanks, Nora, for coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for listening. Even bigger thanks if you are one of the supporters of the show, grimerica.ca/support, if you can, when you can. Other than that, check out grimericaoutlaw.ca for the podcast, contact@thecabin.com for trips and events, adultbrain.ca for the audiobooks, and simulationmaps.com for all those simulation maps, disasters and earthquakes and volcanoes, pole flips, shipwrecks, you name it. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Unattached.